This is The Hardline, the greatest show on earth.
Well, maybe just in St. Louis.
Out of all roads, freak show, something to see. Got them lined up and waiting, taking bullets for me.
I'm a Mack truck.
I'm chucking down a one-way street.
You better move, dance.
My tank's on E.
The Hardline with TJ Moe, Cam Jansen, John Hadley, Bob Ramsey, and who the hell else knows?
It is The Hardline, 5-9 The Fan, Kevin S., 5-9TheFan.com. Matt Rocchio starting us out brilliantly. Without the point, he has learned his lesson, and perhaps Channel 5 could learn a similar lesson to give a cue to the guys when we'd like them to speak. TJ Moe, along with Bob Ramsey, perhaps, John Hadley at some point, someday, and Matt Rocchio, Chris Kerber, the voice of your St. Louis Blues, KMOX Radio will be on at 2 o'clock. He is up in Boston right now. Yesterday was a travel day. The boys were on the ice, and then they had availability after that, so we'll speak to him. He will be fresh off of learning all of that there. So, pretty good stuff all the way around. A few updates. Zdeno Chara did not skate, and while Cassidy, the Bruins head coach, did not come out and say that he would not be playing in Game 5, he gave a pretty good indication. He basically said he's not skating today, which is a pretty good indication he won't be out there tomorrow. We're going to have to plan as such. They did, mispronounced his name, Grzyk, whatever, how do you say it? The guy Sundqvist knocked out. He's in concussion protocol. He was skating with a red penny on. So there's a chance he would be back. It was those red pennies, non-contact jerseys. Not that in a morning skate there's too much contact, but just a clear stay away. So they could be down to two defensemen, and this is what the Blues have done. They wear you down. And look, the Chara thing, that's fluky, you know. But so was the Vince Dunn thing, of course.
Yeah,
it's fluky, but they're. Don't tell me that David Backes is not feeling Sammy Blais every single day and all their guys,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, agreed.
Bergeron is getting crushed. They got a lot of dudes out there. Even Marchand, dude, he doesn't look fully healthy to me. So they got a bunch of dudes out there that the hope is, this has been discussed all day, Tim McKernan has pointed out for a few days now, and the boys were just talking about it on the midday grind. The Blues are crushing it in games 5, 6, and 7. Right, I think they've only lost one of those. They have only gone to Game 7 once. They lost the 1-2 Dallas. They won Game 5 and 6 against Winnipeg, won Game 5 and 6 against San Jose. I think they lost Game 6 there against Dallas. Or lost Game 5 there against Dallas. So they've been really good when they can wear you down. This is another place. The guys that are typically wearing you down, though, Raymer, Bertuzzo's in that group. He sat out last game. Edmondson is in that group. He's sitting out, it appears, this game. They put Bertuzzo in there for Edmondson. And obviously, you had Bertuzzo out to get Vince Dunn in last game. So they're going with a little different look. Obviously, Vince Dunn, especially with the potentially broken jaw, whatever he has going on there, he's not coming up to hit you. So they've changed a little bit, but the guys that they have out there are still hitting your ass.
And along with the hits and the checks, part of the issue in wearing the opponent down is keeping the puck deep in the offensive zone and making the Bruins take long shifts and wearing them down and making them chase you. And that's part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, check after check after check probably is the number one thing. But then the style also adds to that.
I think that's exactly right. And the NHL actually tweeted out, and they've been doing stuff they're smart. This is what every league does to promote the series and the game and such. I think it was either today or yesterday they tweeted out a 3-minute clip of the Blues forecheck when they hemmed him in the zone there, and they said, here is an absolute forechecking clinic, to the point where, and part of it was luck, right, because the Blues were going towards their bench at that point, so when they're in the offensive zone, you can change real easy while the other boys got to skate all the way across the ice, but they can't get it out. While the Blues were getting it deep and making changes on the run and had fresh bodies out there every 40 seconds, and you had guys sitting out there for 3 minutes at a time, that is when you go into, and truly,
that's the grind.
I don't know that they ever really recovered. I know they scored shortly thereafter, but I don't know that they ever really recovered. They had one shot on goal the last 12 minutes of the game. And when you get worn out like that, Cam Jansen was talking about it yesterday. He's talked about it on the morning show. You get absolutely gassed. This is like, you know how we do at the end. You probably do this when you're coaching, Rammer. All right, boys, on the line, run some suicides. And then you go home. That's the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't run a suicide in the middle of practice so that the rest of your practice sucks, because it doesn't matter how tough you are or how in shape you are. You've just run a suicide. So good luck. For the next 20 minutes of practice after that, your guys are going to be a step slower and a little bit worse. That's basically what the Blues did to the Bruins there for about 3 minutes.
Right.
Really brutal stuff. Tim on the text line.
Yeah, because you're on recovery the rest of the time.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Tim on the text line here says, TJ, if that guy is wearing the red Do Not Touch Me shirt, how in the hell can that guy realistically expect to play in about 30 hours against a team that will punish anyone in their way?
Well, that's the point.
Well, yes, it's a concussion. So this is where you're a little bit different. If you have a red Do Not Touch Me when you're talking about concussions, we don't have a simple one. Is different for everybody, right? The David Perron missed 24 games with a concussion. Obviously, a guy that's had a bunch of concussions. If I were to go get a concussion today, I might miss a week, right? So it's different for every guy, and there is no scientific, like, when you get a concussion, your brain is fully healed after 48 hours. There's none of that. It's an unknown. Exactly. So that's why you do that. Is he close? Is he passing all the tests? Well, good. There's no reason to let your teammate hit him. Don't touch him. And if we think he's ready, roll
him
out
there. Let him heal. Yeah.
So, yes, with the red penny you wear up until the day of, there's no reason to go into practice in the Stanley Cup final and just get roughed up by your own guys to check and see if you're ready.
No.
There's no sense in that.
In fact, it would be dangerous for the individual. Hey, let's knock him around to see if his head's right, and then he gets another concussion. That would be criminal.
Yeah, maybe you do that for a hamstring or something like that. Right. But still probably not.
But not the brain.
Instead, you just dress seven defensemen, which they may do here. If he's going to be out there and they're going to test it, they're going to dress seven defensemen and roll with that. It's not a good place to be if you are the Boston Bruins. Dressing seven defensemen and being down a guy when they can actually run four lines to then have a guy double shifting the whole game or screwing up the lines and the chemistry lines. They've talked about that. He said, you know, you don't have one line going. Obviously, the perfection line has been really good at times and then really bad at times. Well, if you try to mix that up or any of the lines, now you're actually screwing up the chemistry of the lines that are playing well. That's a really tough place to be. And this is why Berube, we've talked a lot about this. You've been very complimentary of Berube throughout the season and the tweaks. But the thing that we haven't discussed too much of is recognizing that Sanford could not be a part of that third line and be really good. He's a more skilled guy that, while he's been a little more physical than we thought he would, you have to put him up in a top six role and let Sammy Blais go down, and now that's a good defensive line. Bozak can play defense. Pat Maroon will hit you, and they end up hemming you in the zone too. And then you have a guy like Sammy Blais, who's actually far more skilled than he gets credit for because he's so physical. To put him down on that line and have Sanford up there with a guy like O'Reilly and having some opportunities, making the right play at the right time, I think that was a big move.
With Maroon on that line and even Bozak, that becomes a very, very heavy line. But you got to be careful that you don't get caught against too much speed. And that's why if their minutes would go down on a given game, you could understand it.
I think that's exactly right. And Thomas sort of
negated that.
Exactly.
They were really balanced there.
Yes.
But I think it's a matter of time whether, let's pretend Thomas was healthy. Does he stay on that line the whole time through Game 7? Yeah, maybe. Does he move up to a top six in September, November? At some point, he's a top six guy.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No
so doubt don't know when that was going to happen. And so this is just something we're seeing that was going to be an eventuality anyway with that line.
Yes. Now, the only reason you wouldn't do that is if you re-sign Pat Maroon and the playoff line that we're seeing. You, and then maybe that is your second line, and you just split the minutes, right? It's like right now we're calling this Barbashev's Sunquist Steen line the fourth line, and they're playing 20 minutes. Call them whatever you want. these dudes are playing and they're crushing it. So if you get guys together with chemistry, you divvy up the minutes however you need to.
Yeah.
Call them whatever line you want. This is why the Blues are so dangerous right now. They have coaches that I think are smart enough. Andy Strickland just talked about it. Smart enough to recognize the way Bouwmeester and Parayko are playing right now. Darren Pang said this morning when he was on the Ryan Kelly morning after. He said, Parayko just played his most complete game as a Blue ever. He was so freaking good. And we sort of, obviously, we have recognized what a big influence Larry Robinson, we think, had on him because his game really ascended at that point. But the level that he's playing in the playoffs, he has to be playing 25-plus minutes. Has to be. Well, Bouwmeester, the way that he's played the second half of the season, is right there, too. That's your shutdown pairing. You have Pietrangelo, who just played one of his better playoff games as a Blue. And then Gunnarsson, who's actually been significantly better than any of us would have anticipated. Those were the guys you rolled. Evanson played 7 minutes. You know, you have guys that, okay, run out of gas, fine. We don't care. Just don't run out of gas before these next three games are over.
Right.
And we'll roll with these guys. You play 30 minutes. That's fine. Sundqvist, you need to play 20 as a fourth liner. Great. You know, you just sat out a game. That the coaching, while we keep saying, you know, good job, Ruby, and everybody talks about Binnington, the little tweaks here and there, I can't think of one yet, Rammer, that hasn't worked.
In game three, they shuffled the defense around a little bit, and those pairings didn't seem to work. But there were so many other factors going on in the game that it's hard to really say that specifically.
Yeah.
It could have been part of a negative game. But again, there was so much wrong in that game that you might have to throw the minutes out there and throw out those lineup tweaks, throw it out because the game was a mess.
When things keep working, it's really hard to divvy out credit because is it Berube pulling all the right strings every time and then putting people in a position to succeed? Or is it guys are going to bounce back no matter what, so it didn't really matter if he was going to do that or not? Right? It's like he did. Was it either late Winnipeg or Dallas? I think it was late Winnipeg, where they finally changed Shen and they finally moved him down. And you're like, okay, that clearly was a big time coaching move. But we've watched Binnington and the boys bounce back from virtually every loss since January, right? It's like they've hardly lost.
Right.
So is it a guy pulling strings, or is it guys being ultimately unbelievable at bouncing back at the right time and gritting their teeth?
But how much is that coaching?
Yeah, well, right. The attitude, no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
And I think the number one thing, and almost every coach will tell you, is collective buy-in. Then your job as a coach, if you get people to buy in, put people in the best place they can to be successful. And that's really what lineups are all about. And that, I'm such a nerd because I like to see that. What's the best position to put TJ Moe in to be successful today or in this situation, you know, given situation, given matchup, given opponent, given game, what's the best way to allow him to be the best he can be? And that's what lineups are all about, in my view.
And most coaches thought that was on the bench or on another team. And that's where I spent a lot of my time.
Well, I didn't say that.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's one of the underrated things. We all think, you know, it's okay, you put them, those are three good players. But so much of hockey in any sport is chemistry, right? I was not a better receiver as a sophomore than I was as a senior in college. In fact, I was maybe 2 to 3 times the receiver as a senior. But I had over 1,000 yards as a sophomore. Why? Because me and Blaine Gabbert had great chemistry. I knew where he wanted me to be, and he knew where I was going to be.
And the coaches recognized it and called those plays.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. And so when you get into, you know, you can always try to match up talents and things, but you put a guy with a big arm on a team, and you say, okay, well, you got to have a guy with let's go get Mike Wallace. And then it doesn't work. Why? Well, there's no chemistry. You can't just have a fast guy match up with a big arm, or else everybody would do it, right? There's got to be that chemistry. And what's interesting about this Blues team is you have moved guys to virtually every line. Almost everybody's played with everybody in this team, and it's almost all worked at different times.
Because recognizing who's hot and who's not also plays into chemistry. Okay, these guys click for a few weeks, but something about it is stale. You know, player X, he is really rolling right now. Let's see if he can jumpstart these other two guys. Little things like that you have to recognize.
I'm trying to think through here. Obviously, O'Reilly has been only on the top two lines all year. Same, although Tarasenko, I think, moved down to the third line for just a few games. But Steen has basically played all four this year. We know Sammy Blais has played all four since the playoffs started.
Yeah.
You know, Barbashev has been a top six guy at different times. Like, you've got guys who played up and down the lineup who all have filled their role. And the guy, we've gone back to this 10 times now. But I hope at some point that, first of all, I want this to be a 30-for-30 season. I think, like, the year the Blues finally broke through, this is a storybook type thing. At the very least, it's a 30-for-30 type thing. And I would love to see what Craig Berube had to say to Alex Steen to finally get the buy-in, because he was not interested in what Ken Hinchcock had to say. He had
Mike Yeo.
No interest at all in what Mike Yeo had to say. But nope. Craig Berube walked in the room. He said, "Yes, sir. How long do you want me out there, and what do you want me to say to the boys?" And he's been phenomenal. And I would love to see, was it just a, I respect this guy, it's working, let's buy in? Or was it a, let's have a little heart-to-heart, bud. I played 10 years in the NHL without much talent. Let me tell you how this works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would love to see that.
And one more thing about that line. I'm only calling it the fourth line out of convenience.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows who we're talking about. You know, it's kind of folly, but kind of fun when the guys do the pick-to-click thing. I think in these last three games, that line's going to get a few goals. I really think that in when you started talking about Steen, he might be the guy who's been an offensive player in his past. And I think they're still, at the right moment, that'll be in there. That's not the focus of that line.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those opportunities are going to come.
We've seen some pretty, well, it was, I think it was Sundqvist that scored on the, mm-hmm. basically the behind-the-back pass from Steen right in front of the net, and Sundqvist put it in. They still have first-line-looking plays.
I think we're going to see more of that.
Well.
Could be wishful thinking, but I do really think so.
At this point, would anything surprise you? If the Maroon line had two goals, would you be surprised? I don't think so. If the Tarasenko line had two goals?
No.
If the O'Reilly line had two? Like, there is not, maybe I'd be surprised if you got two from the fourth line in the same game. But really, Sundqvist has got three or four already this postseason, right?
Four, yeah.
You got dudes that can put the puck in the net. And so, and we've talked about how, go watch that clip I told to the one on the NHL Twitter of him in the zone for 3 minutes. The defense pinched like we haven't seen all year. I mean, they were so far dead. There were different times, and it is smart, right? It's like you got guys like O'Reilly or even Tarasenko during that who were smart enough to recognize Pareko's coming down hard, time to get back, and they were the ones there to keep it in the zone when the puck came rimming right back around.
It's funny how they can't do it when they're shorthanded. But 5-on-5, and I've talked about this before, the trust factor that not just when the defensemen pinch, they can be fully committed to it because they trust that their teammates will have their back, literally have their back, and be in position.
Yeah.
And it's something you have to have, or you can't really commit to it. And if you try it and you're not committed, you get caught in no man's land. That's when things turn around and odd man rushes come and all those sorts of things. And so that commitment plus trust equals a pretty dynamic forecheck.
Well, a couple things on this, right? The Blues are really good unless you give them an extra player. Don't do that.
No.
Don't take a player from them and don't give them an empty net to shoot at. Mostly they can't do any of those things. But 5-on-5, if you put a goalie in front of them, they'll crack you.
Yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable.
I saw a graphic today on NHL Network. Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, Krejci, McAvoy, DeBrusk, Backes, all these guys. Marchand is another one. All those guys combined have 0 points in 5-on-5.
Yep.
That's half their lineup and all their good players.
Now, half their goals have come on the power play.
And that's what I'm saying. But, I mean, it just feels like if they stay out of the box, there's nothing stopping them in these next. Winning 2 out of 3.
I believe that's the case. I really do.
I mean, every number points that way.
Yep.
And if we want to go old school, even though I don't accept it, momentum feels that way as well. But, I mean, that's not a real thing. So I'm sticking to the stats so far.
I fully agree with what both you guys just said. So to play devil's advocate, because
you're going to argue with both of us.
Yes.
Okay.
But I totally agree with both of you guys.
Okay.
Could I make the argument that they've been on the power play so frequently we don't even know how good they are 5-on-5 in the games that they're actually playing well? They've played terribly in a couple games, and the Blues have flat dominated. But they were on the power play so much the other games. Could the games they were playing well in actually have been playing well 5-on-5 if the Blues didn't decide to put themselves in the box 15 times a game?
I think that's possible, but usually guys, when it comes to playing offensively, especially if they're a top line or a second line, usually you don't see that stuff affect them negatively. Usually it's on the defensive side. And that's why I think I have to credit the Blues more than discredit the Bruins.
Like I said, I don't agree with anything
right.
I just said.
But I think it's an interesting point. Conversely, though, when the Blues are on special teams, it absolutely screws up their, are you listening, Rock, momentum.
Especially if 91's out there.
There's no question about it.
91 or 9.
Talking about the big Mo or the little Mo?
Or 55.
So the big Mo?
Big Mo.
The big Mo. Oh, damn. Okay. Fair enough.
Splashback Deuce, he was talking about, you know, putting me in a position to succeed. He was wondering if you put me in the missionary position, could I succeed? I don't know.
Time will tell.
I don't know. No, nobody's ever asked that question.
That's amazing.
They'll let us know.
Big Al says, TJ, you're not that smart. You went to Zoo Out West, not Jorge Zoo. Okay. Tim Van Gelder, I would love to know the zone time for each line. Maroon seems to have had the puck on a string below the goal line the entire playoffs. That part is true. Now that we have seen...
And it picked up as the season went along. Once things changed, because if people remember, and most of you do, October, November, December, there were folks that were saying, well, we love Patty Maroon. He's our guy, but this didn't work out. People were saying this is not a good deal.
Well, here's the thing. Everything you heard about him was that even though he wasn't the fastest guy, the fact that he was great with the puck and he had great hands was what allowed him to play with a guy like McDavid and be successful.
Yeah.
And in all fairness to Patty, we love him. He's playing great now, but for the first 3 months, it looked like he had dipped his hands in cement before he went on the ice.
And so that changed not just in the playoffs or just in this round. It started when Berube came in. It started to change his game back. And so did he do something specifically? Hey, hold your stick this way. No, clearly not. It was confidence. It was trust.
I think he stopped white knuckling the stick, really. You're probably gripping it too hard.
A few different things, fellas.
Started playing with your hometown team. Cam talks about how hard that is in ways.
That's part of it.
It's difficult. And I think it, when he got in a groove and the team started playing it well around him, he was able to maybe take some of that off his shoulders a little bit, that he had to be this guy who came in for his hometown team. And he stopped, like you said, just probably started gripping that stick a little bit.
Go play your game.
Exactly.
Couple things. My theory is that he was still injured from last season coming into this year. I think he had maybe a back issue. He had some things going on that he was, I think, very clearly not recovered from. He didn't just look slow. He looked like he didn't belong in the ice. That is when you start to white knuckle the stick, because it's like, I don't belong out here.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to figure it out. Second thing is what Rock touched on here. He and his dad went and saw a psychologist to try to get his head straight because his head was spinning so bad here. Playing in front of the hometown team, getting calls every day about different stuff. Like Cam would say, I go to the gas station and 15 people stop you and ask you why you're not playing better. You're like, you know. So that is a big deal. Hey, Tim says, do you or Rammer have any feel or prediction for how the series will go? Who do you think will win the series and the cup, and in how many games?
I don't know, because I don't think those things are predictable. But I think the Blues, a week ago, I wouldn't have thought they were capable of it. But I think the Blues are going to win 3 in a row. So that means the next two. I think they'll win the next two.
You're stealing my ammunition from the San Jose series. Unbelievable.
Yes. Hey, you got a good hand, you play it.
I like it.
Listen, I'm so good at being negative and pessimistic about my teams. I'm a Mizzou fan that says it all.
Well, you could just tell me you're a Blues fan.
That too. You ask me right now, I stay with way too much confidence. I don't know if I'm ever going to watch a Mizzou championship. Well, the two major ones, I should say. And yet, the fact that I feel the same way, that if they just stay out of the box, they can win 2 in a row. I'm terrified that I'm confident, but I'm also still kind of confident. It's a really weird paradox I'm running through right now. I don't know how to handle it. I'm confident about a St. Louis sports team. This is like the first time in like 5 years this has happened. It's a weird feeling.
Because you don't know, can a given individual, you know, because the Bruins are obviously they're in the final. They're really, really good. You catch, you do a couple dumb things, maybe a couple of accidental things, flip a cup, a puck over the glass, don't quite control your stick, and it hits a guy. All of a sudden, they've got a couple of power play goals. Boom, and here we go. So those things are impossible to predict. But if the Blues limit their penalties and continue to attack the way they've attacked, I believe they're better than the Bruins 5-on-5, and I think they'll win.
Totally agree. Tim Van Gelded, the Berube's master stroke was using Ryan O'Reilly's work ethic to get guys like Tarasenko and Shen to elevate their two-way game. How can you loaf when Ryan O'Reilly is busting his on your line? I don't think Shen was ever a loafer.
No, he was unlucky for a while, and I think he was in a funk. Oh. It's not the same as being loafing. When you're loafing, it's by choice.
Yeah, they were talking about how Shen's big problem is that he sometimes he forgets that he's a skilled player and needs to quit flying around on the ice and hitting people and like do the things that skilled offensive players do.
And he's
that's
best,
not loafing.
But he's best when he does both.
He is.
When his game has yes. that balance. That's when he's at his best. And he started doing that.
Shen, you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. We saw in the Winnipeg series when he thought he had to be the enforcer of the playoffs, and he was worthless.
Well, because remember, when he first moved up to the top line as the left wing, he was kind of the power forward, and we applauded him, and he was really, really good. Then that thing got a little stale, and they switched it back around, and I think that's when he had to kind of find himself again.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And by the way, it's a really, really fine line to toe there. We're watching Sammy Blais do it, who's crushing guys, but his skill game has gone down the tubes here. When's the last time you saw him put a move on a guy and a great shot on net?
And he's capable of it. We know that.
He absolutely is. And that's like it is a very, when you are focused on being physical, it's very difficult to focus on being a skilled guy to make some plays. Splashback Deuce has a good thought here. I think it's probably better than any of the thoughts that we've put out so far today. He said, who gets to stand next to Berube in the pisser tomorrow? That's my pick to click.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. Hockey Bob, the Bruins the Blues are also 4-0 in games. They gave up a shorthanded goal. They've also thrived after horrible officiating that went against them. The Sunquist suspension is that type of call. Blues in six, baby. Cup or bust.
My God, that's the greatest Hockey Bob text we've ever gotten.
I like it, Bob. I also love to rip you, but I'm at a loss. That was good.
That was good.
Hockey Bob, just wear your seatbelt so you can actually see.
Yes, yeah, and, you know, I don't know, maybe slow down at the red light at least.
Yeah, it'll look both ways. I don't care if
again, I'm not even going to take it so far as stop the red light, but I don't know. Slow down, take a beat.
I don't care if you run it. Just look both ways.
Treat it a little yellowish. Maybe like it's got a blink to it. I'm just saying.
Hockey Bob, the Blues won the last two versus Winnipeg, the last two versus Dallas, the last three versus San Jose. That is correct. Big Al says not a shot. Any idea what he's talking about there, Rammer? Any idea at all? Not a shot.
You being veteran missionaries, 100% what he's talking about.
I'm saying the jury's out.
Okay, fair enough.
We won't know till he and his wife tell us.
And me and my wife won't know until our 10-year anniversary, at least.
Let's see, how old are you?
28.
How old is she?
28.
That's not fair. I'm going to set the over-under.
That's not fair to
anybody. I'm setting the over-under at the pregnancy announcement at
31?
At 30 months.
2.5 years?
We're taking money. Put the book that
I
right
30,
down.
I said 31, so yeah.
Oh, did you? Okay.
You're saying about 30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're at
two and a half, three years.
10 months today, she told me.
Call. 40 months?
10 months what?
Today. 30, 30 months, 10 months since we got married.
Oh.
So.
Well, yeah, you're still technically a newlywed.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it feel like newlyweds?
Well, no. Feels like we just started.
I knew the answer to that. I wanted to see what you would say.
Damn.
Big Al, poor Mrs. Moe.
He has moved on from poor Kate.
I don't
Kate.
Know. Here's the thing. Yeah, poor Kate
Mrs.
always meant
Mo.
That he was sad that Kate was with Cam. So now we're switching up the entire connotation.
Alt, he says, no John again. Has anyone checked if Sir Hadley of House of Gout may be stuck in his bathtub?
No, because can you imagine the smell if you went to check on him and it was a negative situation. Negative result.
House of Gout.
We have had presidents get stuck in their bathtub.
What I would say,
Sir William Taft.
If we send the authorities over and they get to his house and the smell, you know what I'm talking about, tape it all up and burn it. And just move on, make it a funeral pyre.
Couldn't we just burn him?
That's what I'm saying.
Save the house.
Make it a funeral.
No, it'd be
fire.
Contaminated.
The whole thing?
Let him have the Viking, you know, except it's not on a boat. But
what if we find out he's a Targaryen? Huh?
What's that?
Yeah, you said funeral pyre. I was going to make a Game of Thrones joke, but only TJ was going to get it.
So well, he went for it. That's okay. I'm willing to catch up.
Yeah, but TJ going for it is different than me going for it.
Did they do funeral pyre Viking style?
It's how she hatches the dragons.
Oh, Alti has a good suggestion.
Obviously, Bob, come on.
Come on.
He says,
that's how she does some other crazy stuff.
Alti says you could use butter to Jimmy Hadley up, but he'd eat it.
Yeah, you couldn't get enough in there fast to make it work.
You can use cooking spray. That's really hard to eat up before. You know, it's a spray.
Oh, it's a spray. Yeah, maybe try that.
I don't see why you wouldn't try this. And Hadley...
Again, if it goes wrong, the smell. I'm just telling you. And if he's been in there for a long time, it doesn't have to be even be dead for the smell. He's been stuck for a long time. There are other things.
We're officially going to have to do the live reads in the next segment, so go ahead.
Yeah, fellas, listen to me. Can I point out how ridiculous this conversation is? Because it's based on the premise that Hadley bathes. In which case...
Yeah, why else would he be...
Did he fall in the bathtub when he was taking a piss? Like, how could he have gotten there?
That's a great call. Yeah, you're right. That was a wasted exercise.
A couple more texts here, boys. Donald Trump's Russian friend, hey boys, Bort's in for Edmondson, possibly. Your thoughts. Did we give actual thoughts on that? We pointed out at the top of the show, I don't know that we gave our thoughts on that. My quick thought is, Edmondson played 7 minutes. He's clearly not been super effective in this series. While he has been in others, it's not a good matchup. He got into it with Backes a little bit too much. I think they have leaned on the guys that are playing much better and have more shutdown / or offensive upside. If, he hadn't been that guy.
If Robert does go in for him, he'll probably play less than 10 minutes too.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. So I think it's a nice fine change. Your job on because they have him paired there with Dunn. Your job is to be the safety net. You don't have to create. We don't want you to create.
I think part of it's definitely the poor play of Edmondson combined with the fact that now everyone's even on the side that they're comfortable with, and now you don't have to worry about anybody being uncomfortable getting the puck off the boards or anything like that. It just evens out well. Now you got three right, three left.
You use the word even. If Dunn and Bortuzzo are the guys that are going to play lesser minutes, Dunn because of his jaw, upper jaw, whatever it is, I think as the game goes on, you'd probably see them rolling with five guys, with Dunn being the fifth, and then as the game rolls on even farther, four guys, or maybe Bortuzzo in there a little bit. I mean, Dunn in a little bit, depending, especially on special teams, that sort of thing. It's like in baseball, even basketball, when it really gets down to it, you shorten your bench. And you can't allow your best players not to be on the court, on the ice, on the field when it really, really matters.
Yep.
It's not CYC anymore.
Right.
You got to play your best guys, and they're not allowed to be fatigued. It's not allowed. It's not in the vocabulary. Yeah. You're not tired.
Yeah, if they don't bring enough players, we might get to re-enter in off the loser's bracket sometimes.
I don't think the NHL is doing Russell backs.
All right, fine.
Rammer,
right,
Donald fine. Trump's Russian we're, friend we're would the like hosting you to read gym. This. Can you read that? Donald Trump's Russian friend. Rammer, talking about John Hadley.
That is the worst smell in the world.
I like it. I like it. Oh, Dr.
Vinny Boom Butts? No.
Don't read it if you don't want to. Where is this technical?
Dickin.
No, wait. Don't say that.
No. Don't. No. TJ, don't.
No, stop. No.
I think it's Russian.
It's not Russian.
Balls.
They don't, no.
They B-A-W-L-S.
No. Okay.
Russian would be LZ, maybe?
Probably with a Z.
Yeah. Anyway, he's
maybe a vowel with some dots over the top of it, whatever that is.
Dr. Dickin says, just brick up that doorway and let that fatty rot in his own tomb. I think that's the first text we've ever gotten from him.
That certainly was what we were talking about could be the case. I'm not sure the aggressive nature of the message needs to be there, but
yeah, I disagree.
It's got to be himself.
I like the passion.
Like, yeah, passion.
People are fired up, Bob. Yeah. It's Stanley Cup final
That's
time.
Right. That's 10, right.
10 for passion, no doubt. Negative 4 for kindness. Altsy passed out, hot dog intoxication.
Just like TJ likes it.
Yeah, look, he also has the gift of apathy. It is spreading. And
gift
last,
is one word.
But not least, Big Al, and I'm not sure why we're allowing this to go on the air, but Bob the Smell is his Hadley's athlete's foot because he is hanging his feet from the tub rim.
That's not even clever.
Heyo. I don't get it.
I think the fungus we're talking about is so far beyond athlete's foot, it's an insult to athlete's foot.
Well, and you cannot... this.
It's its own entity calling that's attached itself to John's
anything
body.
Relating to John Hadley, athlete blank.
It's a misnomer off the,
absolutely
off
worthless.
The bat. Yeah.
A little breaking news here.
This just in.
Doubt it.
Yes, it is. No, it's breaking news. Don't worry, TJ.
Apparently okay. Official.
It is official. The three-point line is being moved back for the 2019-2020 Division I men's basketball to the international distance.
Which is?
I believe, let me find the exact...
Still a little in
so
front of
still,
the NBA.
So it's
high school
be...
state. High school's 19.9. Is that right?
Yes, 19.9 inches. That's right.
So the international line is 22 1¾ inches.
What is the NBA?
23 and something.
Except in the corners.
Yes.
So wait a minute. Give me those numbers again. Let's run down those numbers again.
The international basketball distance of 22 feet, 1¾ inches.
Okay.
I'm guessing that's above the break.
At the top of the key.
Well, here's the thing. The international line doesn't have a break, does it? It's the one.
I wonder why they're doing that. Having it in between just seems.
So NBA is, 23 feet, 9 inches.
Okay, so there's still more.
NCAA was 20 feet 9 inches, and so now it's going to go 22 1¾.
So the NCAA was a foot further than high school. I guess it's okay with me.
I'm fine with it. College guys are too good of shooters now. Move it back. I have said for a long time that that the NBA now would not benefit from moving it back because the guys are so good that all it would do is accentuate how good they are. And they would win. The Warriors would win by 30 then instead of 20.
The line did, when the ABA started it back in the 70s, did what it was supposed to do, open the game up inside better.
Yeah.
And it still does, and maybe even better than ever.
The only way to stop the Warriors truly is move it back 5 feet. Move back 5 feet, and then now it's like a Hail Mary, everybody, you know. And then you say, okay, we're just going to have to, everybody, you're... We have to equalize it somehow. I would never do that because the game's more fun with three-point line.
There's no break in the international line. I didn't think there was.
Rock is still having a conversation with himself.
Yeah, no one really knows what he's talking about. What do you mean the break in the line?
Well, because the NBA has a break. It's 22 feet at the corners, and then above the break, it's 22.
That's because it's too far out.
Because of the sideline.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's because...
You said break, I didn't know
what you meant. Yeah, sorry. I meant the break on the line is what I'm talking about, on the three-point line in the NBA. There isn't one in the
international. You mean the bend.
Bend.
Turn.
The terminology
the
I hear is three
they call it the
is
break.
Three-pointers above the break and then three-pointers in the corner.
Yeah. You know what that might be, but I don't like it.
All right.
And Rock doesn't make the rules on this show.
Because it doesn't make sense. Break.
No, nobody broke anything. Except Chara's jaw. All right, on that, we're going to go to break, boys.
See, look at you, the Prince of Blends.
It's a hard line.